okay, you all know why you're here. NBC had such a big success with the live version of Sound of Music starring Carrie Underwood that we've decided to do a new version of the live Peter Pan with Mary Martin, but not with Mary Martin this time. So we're auditioning some of you for the big roles. Okay, who's first up?
Oh, my name is Sarah Palin, and even though I'll be a real busy with my new show, you know all about it on the Sportsman's Channel, Amazing America with Sarah Palin. You betcha, but I can be Peter Pan. I'm real comfortable swinging on a vine, living in a treehouse, talking to gorillas in their own language.
Yeah, that's Tarzan. This is Peter Pan. He wears green.
Oh, the big guy who's always talking to the little pea, robbing from the rich and giving to the poor?
No, those are the Jolly Green Giant and Robin Hood. This is the boy who sings I'll Never Grow Up.
Oh, you mean Levi Johnston. I think he's making pornos now.
Could we see our next auditioner? I think this is for Captain Hook, so let's hear you be scary.
Well, I'm the best corner in the game. When you try me with a sorry receiver like Crabtree, that's the result you're gonna get. Talk about me.
Who's talking about you?
Crabtree, don't you open your mouth about the best. Or I'm gonna shut it for you real quick. L.O.B.
Okay, let's take a 10-minute break.
Meanwhile, today on The Nose, casting Peter Pan, deporting Justin Bieber, photoshopping Lena Dunham, and regular shopping with Maureen McDonald. And now he's trying out for the role of Nana in a two-person dog suit with Nicolas Cage, Colin McEnroe.
Yeah, the question is, who's going to be the back part of the dog? Me or Nick Cage? Here's where we're talking about all those topics today. We will get through them. I promise. With me from Trinity College is Luis Figueroa. From the Mark Twain House is Jacques Lamar. And from The Cut, a magazine exploiting and something and celebrating the absurdity of Connecticut.
Yeah, I don't even know what it is.
You can, anyway, if you can find it, it's The Cut Mag, I think, at WordPress.com. And there is currently, speaking of Levi Johnston, a graph there on the cover showing that during the cold snaps, Connecticut people do actually download more pornography. Hard statistics. Anyway.
Almost as much as Florida.
Teresa Kramer. I don't think I even said her name, but it was a long intro. All right. So we have a lot of things to talk about, and we do want to begin. And by the way, as we go along, do feel free to call in or tweet us. Greg Hill's our tweet master. Follow us at WNPR Colin. That way you get all the tweets. Greg is tweeting right now, so you can tweet back at him. And what else? You can call us at 860-275-7266. And don't wait till the end of the topic, because we'll switch topics very fast here today. So if something strikes your fancy, call in right away, even if your thought is not completely formed. 860-275-7266. We are going to begin with this plan by NBC. They had a tremendous success last December with restaging, doing a live Sound of Music with Carrie Underwood in the Julie Andrews role and in the Christopher Plummer role, the guy who's the vampire in True Blood, which I didn't figure out. I actually watched some of it. I didn't realize it was him. But anyway, big success. Who knows why? But such a big success that they want to do it again. And one of the properties they seized on, the property they seized on, is something that's already been done that way, and that is Peter Pan. It's actually been done that way more than once, but most famously, of course, by Mary Martin as Peter Pan with the great Cyril Richard as Captain Hook. That was back in, I believe, March 7th, 1955. It actually was a Broadway property. It is, I think my fellow theater maven Jacques Lamar would agree with me, full of great songs. There's a whole bunch of Julie Stein, Betty Comden, Adolph Green songs kind of piled on top of some of the original songs that were written by Mark Sharlop and Carol Lee. So it's I Won't Grow Up and I Got a Crow and I'm Flying and Captain Hook's Waltz and there's some other songs that don't work quite as well. We can talk about those. There's some Native American things which may have to be tweaked a little bit. I'm not sure how Ugga Wugga Wigwam is going to go over these days. But anyway, it's a show, and a show a lot of people connect to. The question is, who do you have as Peter Pan? And for that matter, who do you have as Captain Hook? So, Jacques, this is sometimes called dream casting, right?
Yes, I love dream casting.
Yeah. So have you figured this one out?
Well, you just hit me with the Captain Hook, so yeah. I'm puzzling a little bit.
I have
that
solved
one.
The Captain Hook. You mentioned another possibility, which is Tim Curry, and Tim Curry and Johnny Depp are already pre-tested as pirates. We know they can be pirates.
Yes.
We also know that Johnny Depp can't sing. Well, no, Johnny Depp cannot sing. We all saw Sweeney Todd. He cannot sing.
He can carry a tune. He can carry a tune. But I, as I was sitting here, I'm like, boy, I need to come up with, because someone, you know, the traditional thing is to cast a woman,
mm-hmm.
but you don't have to do that.
No.
You know? And so.
Well, you had one pretty good idea ripped from today's headlines.
Oh, but Justin Bieber?
Yeah.
Yes. That's what I was going to suggest that too. Yeah.
Well, you know, I he's too soiled now. Peter Pan has to be someone really special.
No, but wait a minute. Didn't Peter Pan say that he didn't want to grow up?
Right.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess that applies to Justin Bieber.
Also, oh, I know. But also, you want kids to watch this and feel safe.
Could also be Joan, you know? Could also be Joan Rivers. She doesn't want to grow up either.
This is true.
Got a lot of work
she'd
to
She'd actually
that.
Be a good Captain Hook.
She'd be a good Captain Hook.
Or a good Nana, for that matter. I was just thinking Daniel Radcliffe.
Daniel Radcliffe would be an interesting Peter Pan. We know he can sing and dance. He did. He's done Broadway.
He's a charmer.
He's so associated with something else, though. I mean, could you get over him as Harry Potter and accept him as Peter Pan? I don't know. I think he should only be allowed to do one of those iconic things.
I'm the wrong person to ask about that because I've never gotten into Harry Potter, so I really don't care what else he's
in. Have you ever gotten into Peter Pan?
No. Yeah.
You know,
I'm here.
But I may now.
We have to acknowledge the fact that, Luis, your Puerto Rican childhood did not really
did not include. I mean, my Puerto Rican childhood included Batman and Robin and Superman and all kinds of American things. But at least for me, not Peter Pan. So I was trying to say, okay, what happened with Peter Pan? What's the story with Peter Pan? I know. Just a little thing that flies that is a little tiny. And he said that he didn't want to.
Tinkerbell.
Tinkerbell does not appear in the music.
So I actually put on Facebook
this. She's just a light.
Yeah. I put on Facebook this morning that I'm on the intriguing topics for today's news. There were going to be some that would make me fail a citizenship test, even if my life depended on it. And this is one of them. So I have a question for Jack, for Colin, for Teresa. Why is usually Peter Pan cast with a woman playing a role?
Well, there are lots of very good reasons for this, but this allows me to tell very quickly a story which will humiliate my son, except that he's in class right now. So when my son was 4 years old, he invented his own word for penis, and it was bulla. And that's what he referred to. I mean, despite our efforts as conscientious 1990s parents to try to teach him all the right anatomical words, he invented the word bulla. And so men have bullas, and he would say, and ladies have something else. He and I were watching, we had the video of the VHS of this wonderful Mary Martin Peter Pan, which we watched many times. And we were watching it one day, and my son was four, and he's looking more fixedly at the screen. And he finally says to me, and he had kind of a little stammer back in those days, he said, "Does Peter Pan have a bulla?" He's looking at Mary Martin, and I didn't really know how to answer that question. I said, "I don't know. What do you think?" He looked at Mary Martin a little while longer, and he went, "Peter Pan has something else." But, I mean, I think the real question is you need somebody who can sing those songs, you know, and make the whole thing work. I think the thinking back in 1955 was maybe that was going to be too tough for a kid, plus they were going to have to put the kid on wires. So, like, if the kid crashed or something, might be a hard thing to explain to his parents. And the other thing was they were looking for a star vehicle for Mary Martin. I mean, Mary Martin was a big star already at the time, and they just knew on Broadway, this was sort of Spider-Man turn off the dark in 1955. So, you know, they knew it was going to work if it had a big star in it.
So essentially, because that was the case when that first edition of Peter Pan in the 50s, then everybody, every high school in the country has to repeat the pattern and cast a girl in the role of Peter Pan.
Yeah, it's been subsequently done with Mia Farrow, very appropriately, opposite Danny Kaye in the 1970s. And, of course, Kathy Rigby, the famous gymnast, toured and toured and toured with this. As I think she launched it on Broadway, Jacques, and then just did a national tour.
It keeps coming back, too. And I saw it the last time it was the Bushnell, and it was she's still amazing.
Yeah, I did, too. And I'm knocked out by her.
Yeah. Sandy Duncan did it, too.
So come on. Pull on your pop culture stuff. Who can do this now? Who can do it?
So we need to pick female and male candidates? Or
I don't make rules here. It's the nose. You can do anything you want.
Actually, why not Selena Gomez for Peter Pan?
I was just going to say that because you'd brought her up, but yeah, you'd have to chop off her hair though.
Yeah,
could Bruno Mars do it? He can sing. Oh. He can dance.
Oh, there's a Puerto Rican Peter Pan.
Yeah.
The question is, can he act?
Yes, he can.
That was the question that no one asked Carrie Underwood.
Right. Yeah. Although that role requires more acting than Peter Pan. Peter Pan is pretty. I mean, there aren't a lot of levels to Peter Pan. You're just Peter Pan, basically.
Yeah, but you don't want to look like a wall-eyed salmon in front of the camera.
I believe Bruno Mars can do that.
Yeah. I heard someone mention pink as an idea.
Well, she's always flying around.
What about Miley Cyrus?
Miley Cyrus is another. See, now
she's
going to
need an understudy.
She can act.
If you want to chime in with
twerking,
this, you want
to. But she again, flying, he would be twerking.
Yeah. She again strikes me as
right.
too dirty.
No twerking for Peter Pan. I feel like Miley Cyrus is too soiled through no fault of anybody but herself. She lacks the innocence that is intrinsic to Peter Pan, But Pink, I think, on the other hand,
I don't know if I'd call Pink innocent.
No, she's not.
Yeah. But she's tomboyish. Yeah.
And her language leaves something to be desired at times. But yeah, she is tomboyish. And we've seen her do aerial acts already. Yeah. So, by the way, if you want to cast Peter Pan, it's only going to be another few minutes that we'll be talking about this. 860-275-7266. 860-275-7266.
Maybe one of the guys from One Direction or something like that? Because I feel like part of the success of this is to get a giant star.
Oh, yeah.
No one really cares if they're good. They just like them, so they tune in to watch it. So yeah.
That certainly was the carry.
He has to be singers, right?
You've got to be able to sing. This actually, that's the one.
Because
thing.
I don't know if Philip Seymour Hoffman knows how to sing, but he would be a great Captain Hook for me.
Well, I have the answer for Captain Hook. At least I think I have the answer. Although I think Tim Curry is a great suggestion too, because we know that Tim Curry can sing and he can dance and he's fabulous and he's even been a pirate in Muppet Treasure Island. I still think the right answer is Christopher Walken, because we know that Christopher Walken started out in musicals. He was actually a chorus boy, right, in musicals, and he was in Broadway musicals. In of course, we know from Pennies from Heaven, he can really sing and dance, and of course, he sings and dances a little bit in Hairspray, less demandingly.
I had two thoughts sitting here. One is Hugh Jackman, and the other is Jack Black.
Ooh, those are both good.
Yeah.
Those are both good.
That'd be fun.
I'm sticking with Chris.
I was just thinking for Peter Pan, maybe one of Will Smith's various children, because they can sing, they can act. They're also pretty small.
Various children?
Yeah. I love how they're generic.
How many paternity suits are behind?
Well, no, there's Willow, who's the really famous one. Then there's the one that's in all the movies, the boy, Jaden.
They could maybe add Whip My Hair as a song, you know? I mean, just drop that in as, you know.
Willow was supposed to be doing the remake of Annie, and then suddenly they got rid of her, and it's the girl who was nominated for an Oscar 2 years ago.
Kevenge Wallace.
Yeah, she's supposed to be doing it.
All right, let's grab a quick call from Patrice in West Hartford. Hi.
Hi. Well, you know, I think that while you're talking about various performers, you have to figure that Peter Pan, him or herself, really carries the show in terms of both the acting and the singing. And the singing is in the, like, mezzo-alto range.
Mm-hmm.
So if it's a male, it has to be a really high tenor. Of course, I suppose these days they'll switch everything around for anybody who's a star.
They can fix it in post, as they say now.
Yeah, what about who's the one in Everything, the Hunger Games girl?
Jennifer Lawrence?
Oh, yeah.
Do we know that Jennifer Lawrence can sing?
I don't know.
No. Something tells me she's busy, though.
Yeah, she's busy. Yeah. She doesn't need
to. She can do everything.
She's very, very young, though. You know, if it's a female, it has to be, like, practically prepubescent.
Miriam Martin was menopausal.
I mean,
you know.
Kathy Rigby is older than Methuselah now.
I'm afraid they're going to give it to Carrie Underwood, don't you think?
Well, no, I think that they're not going to go drink it that well again. I mean, as dumb and predictable as network executives are, you kind of think that they at least could go down to a new watering hole.
But they kept saying that's why they got her, because she had this built-in audience.
Right.
Who else has that in the heartland,
But Carrie Underwood is not the only person in America with a following. I mean, there are other people.
Clay Aiken.
Clay Aiken, that's perfect.
Oh, that's such a bad idea. I hope they do it. It's such a really terrible idea that I hope they will actually do it. Or Dr. Hook.
I like Dr. Hook.
Dr. Hook could be Captain Hook.
There you go.
All right. We are almost out of time with this unless somebody's – the board is getting full with people with suggestions. Maybe we'll give it another second. Although, I mean, while they're getting ready to talk about this, maybe we can fuse – I mean, Justin Bieber is – if you weren't – you really do think that Justin Bieber, because of urinating in public buckets and drag racing and getting arrested for DUI and monkey smuggling, one of his...
And undoubtedly to go into rehab.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Peter Pan has a rehab case. I think that is the updating. That's the updating of the story for the 21st century.
Yeah.
And it would speak to a lot of people. It would also be a multicultural Peter Pan in a way because he's Canadian. And there's the whole issue of the politics of immigration because... He might not be deported because he's wealthy. Otherwise, you know, people who are arrested like him, they face probably deportation without a lawyer and being in detention for a long time. But honestly, when I thought about this and when we were exchanging emails, I thought, why not? He's tiny. He's like, kind of like a Peter Panish kind of character. He can fly.
And he can sing and he can dance.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, actually, he's not a bad choice, except that, yeah. Except
and they clearly don't care if it's good, right? Like, that. As long as people watch it, they don't care if it's good because the other one
he's
wasn't
the audience.
Good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
and everyone would watch it if, like, a drunk Justin Bieber was going to show up.
Justin Bieber as Peter Pan on NBC will bring a Super Bowl audience
right. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It you know, they did say in the original New York Times article about this, which ran last Monday, that they had a dream guest. There was one person in particular that they had a piece of dream casting in mind, and they were pursuing what that was. And that was before the arrest, the latest incident, of course. And just to reiterate, just what Justin Bieber's got on his rap sheet these days is what? He's got egging a neighbor's house. Mm-hmm. He's got graffiti tagging a hotel in Australia, the exterior of the hotel where he was staying.
Are we transitioning here, Colin?
We are transitioning.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I just want to make sure that I'm following the segue. Okay.
Yeah. So he's got graffiti tagging. He's got monkey smuggling. And I feel like the monkey smuggling has gone underreported.
He also abandoned that monkey in Germany.
In
he
Munich.
Just left it there.
Yeah,
he never
well,
went
that's
back
because
for his
he had this pet monkey with him, but it didn't have its shots. Yeah. It didn't have its shots. It did not. And he had the monkey in Germany, and it didn't have its papers. Where are your papers? You know, you don't want to do that to a monkey in Germany, of all places. So
I'm in tears here with the monkey story.
Yeah, so he just left. He left the monkey in Germany, and he's not paying for its upkeep or anything like that. So it's like a. He's a deadbeat monkey owner. And so there's all
Wasn't
of that.
Was he also in a Brazilian whorehouse?
There was a Brazilian whorehouse, something along those lines.
So what happens to people like him who basically the business of music in this case makes them grow up too soon, too early, a ton of money, before they can even, you know, have a sense of themselves in life, and they're thrown into this turmoil, and the system then spits them out on the other end of the machine. Some of you sending an email as we were preparing for the show the last couple of days about another character,
Corey Haim.
Yes, and I read about this, and you know, there was back in the day was what's the guy?
Probably another thing that didn't penetrate your Puerto Rican upbringing was Corey Haim, right?
Yeah, absolutely not.
Yeah.
So this is like. This is part of your
but
naturalization.
I mean, there's one that I know, but now I'm getting old, so I forgot the name now. The Rebel Without a Cause was the guy in the 50s.
James Dean
is another example. So what is in the psychology of human beings that get rich and famous in such an early age that they sometimes cannot handle these things?
Well, I mean, another way to ask that question, I think, is, you know, I mean, so we've enumerated all of the crimes of Justin Bieber, and just to sort of bring you up to date, if you don't follow this kind of thing, most recently he was arrested down in Miami Beach. By the way, when they arrest you in Miami Beach and you're famous, they tweet your photo. The police department's account has a Twitter account, and they tweet your mugshot, which seems wrong somehow.
But, I mean, Justin Bieber was so either drunk or stoned when they took the mugshot,
or
both, that he was laughing.
Yes. So he was drag racing. He did not actually have a valid driver's license. And there does appear to be some chemically induced impairment on top of all that. So this is maybe the most serious thing that he has ever faced. And as Luis was alluding to earlier, he is here on a visa. And it said visa. And see if I can find the exact language for it. It cites his. Well, this is sort of boilerplate for a visa of this kind. Extraordinary ability in the sciences, arts, education, business, or athletics. So he's here on a special visa because of his extraordinary ability.
Isn't it called like an extraordinary alien?
Yeah.
Isn't that what it is?
Yes,
no, but literally I think it's called like an extraordinary alien.
Extraordinary alien clause, yep.
And remember that, of course, Richard Nixon tried to deport John Lennon for much less. But, you know, as some writers have pointed out, if he were black or Puerto Rican or a Middle Eastern descent or something, the deportation might be starting right now. He's got enough now piled up on
Plenty.
His record. So that on the other – but the other way to look at it is, you know, pop stars – you know, some as another writer pointed out, this is like – if you add up everything that Justin Bieber's ever done, it's like an average morning for Keith Richards.
Just a 19-year-old kid. Like, if he was a 19-year-old kid in a frat house somewhere, he wouldn't have a Lamborghini to be racing in, but
right.
So he'd be,
well,
racing his crappy Civic or something. Yeah. He's a 19-year-old boy who gets into trouble. Like, wow.
If you probably dated guys who peed in buckets in restaurants and stuff like that at 19, right?
At 19, no. My boyfriend was not a public urinator. Right. Yeah.
Now imagine
something you could be very proud of.
Yes.
I mean, I'm so behind the times sometimes on these pop culture things. I try to keep up.
You knew who Justin Bieber was dating.
Yes, Selena Gomez, because I like Selena Gomez. She's a good pop singer for me, for dancing and so on. But if he had been Selena Gomez, who was getting into all this trouble,
right?
The attitude of people would be different. Not that it's like, oh, it's a bad boy or whatever. It would be something like, oh, she's the Mexican and so on, even though she's an American, unlike him. So I'm still trying to think what we can get out of the story of Justin Bieber that could be like a parable for something else. That's what I'm trying to get at. I'm not being very successful, but I'll be maybe in a minute.
There's a long history of child stars having, these kind of tragic trajectories.
The entire cast of Different Strokes.
Most recently a cast member of Glee. That ends tragically.
Yeah, and so I was in there trying to think of like, all right, who's an example of one that just did not go completely off the rails. And this circles back to Peter Pan. Justin Timberlake.
Ricky Martin.
Yeah, no, I think the other key is, we're very used to rock and rollers and pop stars who are edgy and transgressive and get in a lot of trouble, whether it is Keith Richards or Ozzy Osbourne or Jim Morrison or whoever. On the other hand, most of them aren't pitched quite at the same kind of preteen, teeny bopper demographic. I think you're held to different standards sometimes if your audience is, the people who are, listening to the Rolling Stones pretty much from the get-go are old enough to get into some of the same kinds of trouble that the Rolling Stones got into, whereas Justin Bieber has courted, a much younger audience, and so maybe he gets held to a different set of standards for that reason.
Well, I think, if you look at people like Britney Spears, who had, she kind of came out of the as making her debut as a pop star came out, sexualized right away. But if you look at someone like Miley Cyrus, where it's like all of a sudden you have to, consciously show that you're grown up and that you're tough in some form or fashion. And there are people who are capable of making that transition a bit better than others. Miley Cyrus maybe being an example of that. But, I think, he had a very squeaky clean pop image, and I think he's trying to act a little gangsta now.
Little gangsta pretty well describes it. And we're going to have to stop right there. We have other things we want to talk about. All of them, not all of them. We'll be talking about the former governor of Virginia in the next segment. But first, we'll be talking about another pop culture kerfuffle, the photoshopping of Lena Dunham.
All of the awful things that have me, not I.
All right, we're back. Teresa Kramer, Jacques Lamar, Luis Figueroa are all here as part of The Nose. If you believe that the show is unworthy of the standards of public radio, you may email me, Colin, C-O-L-I-N, at WNPR.org. But if you're enjoying yourself, maybe you should follow us on Twitter at WNPRColin. All right, so and our phone number as we get into this topic, 860-275-7266. Pre-program it into your phones. We do go faster around the topics. We're going to switch pop culture tracks a little bit and talk about the photoshopping of Lena Dunham. She is, of course, the star and the creator of the HBO hit series Girls. One of the things she does on that series is treat us to many, many, many looks at her body, which is what it is, and it's sort of not the svelte or hourglassy thing that ordinarily gets exposed in mass media. But it's her, and she's kind of we'll discuss what it is that she's done. Well, meanwhile, Jezebel, which is sort of the feminist part of the Gawker empire, Jezebel.com, has sort of a long-running battle with women's magazines that Photoshop and otherwise tweak pictures of women. And one of the things that they've done in the past is say, you know, if you can get us the raw photos for any, you know, cover layouts for these big women's magazines, we'd love to show people what the model really looked like, more like a human being before all the, whether it's Kate Upton or whoever, before all the tweaking went on, whether it's Photoshopping or other kinds of digital alteration. Specifically, what they did this time with Lena Dunham's photo layout and cover on Vogue was put up a $10,000 specific bounty. They wanted $10,000 for the unretouched images. They got those images. They ran them. They showed them as kind of a comparison to what Lena looked like in the unretouched images, and then what it looked like in the big glossy layout. And this has touched off quite a controversy on a bunch of different levels. But we'll go to Girls fan and spokesman for her own generation, Teresa Kramer, right now. I mean, what do you make of all this?
Well, at first I was kind of – it didn't take long for Jezebel to get the pictures, first of all. It was like a matter of hours. So I saw them and I was like, they really didn't do a whole heck of a lot to her. And I thought that was more interesting than anything else because she doesn't look wildly different. They kind of – you know, there's one picture where they kind of raise up her neckline so that you don't see her weird, like, armpit flesh. And I would be like, well, if that was me, I would thank them very, very much. But on the other hand, Lena Dunham has made a huge deal about showing herself as she is all the time in really unflattering ways. And so it's just, I mean, it was interesting. And the fight about it afterwards, because there were other sort of feminist websites who were mad at Jezebel for doing this, and then they're fighting amongst themselves, and a lot of people lost a lot of sleep over it, I guess. But
what was the complaint from the feminist websites?
Well, that they had basically put a bounty on Lena Dunham's body and were sort of body shaming her, which was clearly not what they were doing. So it was all very convoluted and strange to me. I didn't really understand.
Well, I think one of the questions was, in the past, Jezebel has made comparable offers for any photos like this of anybody, anytime somebody's photo is being really retouched for a magazine cover. But the targeting of Lena Dunham, making something specific out of her, I think that's something that the feminist websites objected to. It's like you have there's some price that Lena Dunham is being made to pay.
Yeah, because the problem is that for a lot of people, she does not conform to the stereotype of what beauty is defined as for a lot of women in the society. And so I can understand the critique of doing that because it's basically targeting her for those reasons. Now, I have a question, however, to kind of like participate here from my own angle is to these two people who are authors here who have written books or playwrights and isn't that the case that when you write a play or you write a book or a newspaper article about somebody, a lot of times you actually retouch that characters, that person? I know historians, for example, who take a character in history and they paint so critical a way of that character. Isn't that the same when people do in text as what they're doing in Photoshop here? Isn't that something that has happened all the time? What do people get so upset about? This Stalin used to do it too. He would airbrush people out of the pictures when they fell out of favor under his regime in the Soviet Union.
I'm not sure that's an analogy Vogue would really welcome.
Yeah.
We're just like Stalin.
Yeah, Vogue is just like Stalin.
Well, there was this sort of larger Photoshop debate that also came up after, which I thought was sort of more interesting than Lena Dunham herself, because there was also this AP photographer who was fired for retouching a picture that he sold to the AP. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, all he did was take a camera that got into the shot out of the Shah in Syria. And they won't work with him anymore. And then Aerie, it's like the lingerie offshoot of American Eagle, sort of aimed at teenage girls, they've launched this campaign where they're using completely unretouched photos. And so the larger conversation about around Photoshop in general is sort of what I'm is coming to like a boiling point, and I think that's more interesting than being a dino.
But I think there's two conversations about that, whether we're talking about photoshopping, retouching. I mean, these are all different things, and they all have different implications. But on the one hand, yes, there's the whole question about accuracy. When are you or are you not taking something that you're representing as true and accurate and real and, in fact, altering it for whatever purposes? So that's one set of questions. To me, the more pressing set of questions, the ones that lie in this story, have to do with expectation and body image. And the argument that gets made is that there really are kind of almost two sets of victims. In fact, Stephen Metcalf said this on Slate Culture Fest the other day. I thought it was a brilliant observation that, you know, first of all, women do feel victimized by all this. They are constantly being shown and the people around them are being shown completely unrealistic images of women. I mean, it's tough enough to look like the real Kate Upton, but it's even harder to look like this fabulous retouched and re-imagized, digitally altered and improved Kate Upton. And so what does that do to your own self-image that you just fall so far short of this? What Stephen Metcalf said is there's also a group of male victims who are basically told, this is what women look like, so go get one of these. And are therefore in for a life of extreme disappointment. And to me, that's what's at large here, I think, you know, that argument. That Lena Dunham, I think, maybe was seen by a lot of people as someone who would lead a charge against that whole tide of unrealistic expectations. And so to see her so fabulously babed up here in various ways, I mean, actually the hair and makeup work really helped a lot.
Honestly, I didn't know who she was 48 hours ago. Didn't know about the show. So I went and Googled. Who is she? And then I also searched in Google for images. And I'm like, wait a minute. She doesn't need a Photoshop. Mm. And all of a sudden I found she's quite an attractive woman. I mean, there's no need for any Photoshopping her.
Photoshop supermodels on those things. You know, right. They'll have a zit or whatever. I mean, I think with Vogue, it's not National Geographic. Mm-hmm. They're selling a fantasy. They're selling an idealized look at femininity, and I think Lena Dunham going into it, you know, would have been, and she's not squawking about it.
Mm-mm. No, she's actually.
She's probably like, I've never looked so good.
Interviewed while in Paris, she said, no, she didn't have a problem with this. She doesn't quite understand what the problem is.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, if she's a person, you know, and you know, maybe they're confusing her character with, you know, with her, but you know, people aren't turning to Vogue for a warts and all portrayal of people.
Well, sure. What I think is I don't think I personally don't have a problem with Vogue retouching the photos and. In some cases, I mean, it was just putting a pigeon on her head, which clearly they couldn't get a pigeon to just land on her head.
Well, there's like a whole big conversation about whether they did get the pigeon.
But then the Jezebel argument, people start getting mad at Jezebel for even putting this bounty on her, which I think is sort of overreacting because, of course, they wanted the Lena Dunham photos because she's put herself out there as this alter image to this. And you can only see the retouched photos of people like Kate Upton, where you're just like, oh, they just made her even skinnier.
Yeah. I mean,
so what are they doing to real people?
Right.
Was
there's
way
an
more
implied
interesting.
Contract, a compact that people, a lot of people, including people at Jezebel apparently, thought that Lena Dunham had made with everybody else, which is, I will not participate in this. I will, in fact, insist on letting you see the real unvarnished me. And so there's a little kind of sense of betrayal running through the air here. And since we're talking about senses of betrayal, that'll be our quick segue to our final topic. Yeah, I know. I feel like
majestic.
Like the conductor in Thomas the Tank Engine or something. But so our last topic is the former governor of Virginia, Bob McConnell, who was a rising star. Was a rising star in the Republican Party. I think I said McConnell. It's McDonnell. And until now, he and his wife Maureen have been indicted on 14 counts of corruption, having to do with the acceptance of all kinds of things involving private jets and designer gowns and golf trips and Rolex watches Louis Vuitton footwear in exchange for thousands of dollars of gifts, loans, and perks, in particular from a guy named Johnny Williams, who is a political donor to the McDonald's, but also a guy who may or may not have benefited in the or benefited in the form of his dietary supplements company, Star Scientific. So there are a whole bunch of questions about this, and it, you know, will go to it has become a criminal case. But the thing that intrigued me, and the only thing that we have time to spend on right now, is it sort of fits in a little bit with the Lena Dunham story in the sense that a couple of women writers, especially the amazing, wonderful Dahlia Lithwick of Slate, became intrigued by the way that Maureen McDonnell is being pulled out of this and kind of showcased as and being called a Lady Macbeth and a whole bunch of other things. That somehow or other, her spending and some of the emails of hers that have come out about sort of the needs that they have for various kinds of exorbitant things and lifestyles and the problem they're having with their credit cards and stuff like that, that that's become the symbol of the case. So I don't know. Who wants to take this one? Luis, you've been following this.
To me, believe it or not, one of the best pieces that I've read about this was in the National Journal, where they were saying that this is another example of the problem in American politics, that in order for you to play the game, you have to have a certain amount of wealth. So that, you know, if you don't have enough wealth, then you find yourself in a predicament, trying to show off with certain kinds of people, rub shoulders with certain kind of people. These individuals, this couple, were facing financial problems even before he became governor because of the crash of 2008. So the critique that I think it's not just simply about issue of gender, but it's a broader critique about the state of money in politics in American society, what do you have to pretend that you're doing, and the people you're rubbing off. The New York Times had an article about all these vacations that politicians take in the Rocky Mountains and other places like in Puerto Rico and the Caribbean and so on, where the lobbyists take them there for these vacations.
And it's actually legal. It's a loophole.
It's a loophole. It's legal. In the case of Virginia, the loophole is that if the gifts were given to the wife of the governor, they didn't have to be reported. So that also creates a way of putting her in a spot.
So Maureen McDonnell, the former First Lady of Virginia, I mean, one of the things that's been quoted in almost every article is this frantic email that she sends to their benefactor. I need to talk to you about the inaugural clothing budget. I need answers. And Bob is screaming about the thousands I'm charging up in credit card debt. We are broke, have an unconscionable amount in credit card debt already, and this inaugural is killing us. I need answers, and I need help, and I need to get this done. So what's the laugh line there? Is making you chuckle?
Well, I mean, it's just the level of panic over her inaugural gown, and then when you read what she spent on her shopping spree in New York City, it's interesting because I hadn't been following the story, and so I went online, and it didn't seem like she was necessarily, you know, getting more stripes than he was. You know, it was. You know, oftentimes it said, you know, Virginia governor and wife, or mention governor, you know, McDonnell and wife. And so it's interesting that these people might be saying that she's getting called on the carpet. And then I read this one article that kind of pulled out certain things. And, you know, I was looking down the list of things that they received, and there was obviously a lot of golf stuff for him and whatnot. But it, you know, it seemed pretty clear that, you know, her hand was very deeply in the till and selling access to her husband, because there was like, you know, if I get the shopping spree, you'll sit next to him at this dinner.
Now, I would also like to add, there's a little wrinkle on this that not a lot of people comment, is that a lot of times she was asking for things that were not for her.
Yeah.
So it was not like she wanted certain luxury items for herself, which would be the, you know, the ultimate sort of vanity. Okay, I want these dresses and purses and whatever. She wanted these expensive things for him. Like, for example, the Rolex watch. Or driving a Ferrari.
It seemed pretty split.
It was pretty well divided.
It was
up.
Pretty
she,
well
she
divided
She did want
up.
Things for herself. Well, yeah. I mean, to me, I want to hear what you say first, unless you want to defer to me. I'll defer to you first. One has ever done on the show before. So.
No, I will bow down and let you go first.
Well, I feel like there is a trope here, and Dahlia Lithwick, I think, identifies what it is. First of all, back when I was at the Hartford Courant, my editor, Kerry O'Connor, and I used to have a conversation about how, in terms of sort of making a scandal go on and on and on for days and days and days and weeks and weeks and weeks in the media, or predicting how far it would go, we thought we could probably develop a sort of a wheel. And it would be one of those wheels that has sort of a pin in the middle of it and a series of concentric circles. And if you lined three or four things up on it, you know, you'd know that this was going to last for 6 months. And one of the things had to be a chercher la femme. In other words, a scandal that has no gender angle, no interesting woman to it, won't last as long. We all know that, well, people sort of know that Ted Stevens from Alaska spent a lot of money, you know, fixing up his house. But, I mean, nobody cares about it. It's not an interesting story. It went away almost instantly because there wasn't anything sexy about it. There wasn't a gender part of it. And, you know, these stories get driven forward sometimes if they do have the quote-unquote Lady Macbeth angle, or if they do have a Mata Hari angle, if they have some kind of femme fatale or it's something about our appetite and the media feeding that appetite. And so with this thing, yeah, there are a lot of comparisons to Calista Gingrich, who also, and now and it could be just as Louise said, that Newt Gingrich was running around charging $50,000 worth of stuff at Tiffany's because he loved Calista so much, not because she demanded it. But, you know, famously, she pulled him off the campaign trail and forced him to go on a Greek island cruise, and his whole campaign staff quit. These kinds of stories, they're a trope anyway. It's a familiar trope. It's a storyline, a new storyline, can be fit into and can exploit in order to keep the public interested, which is the job of the media. All right.
I'm sitting here thinking about other times something like this has happened, and I keep thinking about Imelda Marcos and why it is people focus on the shoes and, you know, not the murder. And then I was thinking about Sarah Palin during her campaign and how everybody was obsessed with her $100,000 suits. And I just kept thinking, like, well, what's John McCain wearing? I'm pretty sure it's not cheap. And people, but basically, I guess I'm agreeing that.
There are cases on the other, you know, flip the gender equation there. Jeremy Ferraro, what basically destroyed her career was her husband. Business affairs. The New York Times article that was criticized in the Slate article had examples also of male spouses that did things like this that ruined the career of their women spouse. And so I understand the critique that the feminist critique of scapegoating the women and so on. I agree with it. But on the other hand, there are cases like this one where it seems to me that it's pretty, the evidence that's been shown so far is that she did seek out certain things. Mm-hmm. That is not like it's invented. It's not like in other cases where we don't have the evidence.
Well, I think one of the you sort of said when you started talking about this was the idea that they were already in horrible, massive debt before they even got to this point. So, you know, I don't know enough about this to know how far back this goes, where one or both of them was demanding and living among their above their means, and sort of this very
very good question, because
American
he was attorney general. Mm-hmm. Before he became governor, and before that he was a state legislator in Virginia. We don't know. I mean, they said that they have very, very large amount of credit card debt alone when he became governor. And that's a lot of the money that she got from this empresario was deposited on the bank account in order to pay credit card debt.
I'm just going to wrap this up because we have to go. We have to do our endorsements. I do want to say that when I finally am absolutely fired out of journalism for the last time, I am going to go to work in crisis management, and because I, having covered so many of these things and having been part of the problem, I think I know what some of the solutions
are. That's a
good
idea.
You know? And I can
like
tell you that the McDonald's have a few problems. One of them is that they've now retained separate counsel, and they may be trying to blame one another. In fact, Bill Curry compared this to the movie The Ref, you know, where the husband and wife are tied to chairs and forced to work things out. So that's another problem. They may be about to try to blame one another as much as possible. That's a disaster from the point of view of crisis management, because it keeps the story going if you're, in fact, feeding dirt onto the other person.
Yes.
And in general, what I would tell my clients is don't let your spouse become a story no matter what. No matter what it takes, don't let it happen. Don't let them talk. You know, John Roland's problems got worse when Patty Roland, at a big event, read a – was the night before Christmas – poem that made fun of the scandal that they were in at that point and taunted one of the reporters who was covering the scandal. It got a lot worse then. Chris Dodd worked very hard to keep his wife out of the mortgage problems that they were having. There was a whole theory that Jackie had gone out and gotten this mortgage. He would not let that happen. And I think he did it out of chivalry, but he was also very smart not to do it. You do not want Cherche La Femme on your scandal. All right, we got to take a break.
If you go back to the original play, the Macbeths accepted a free microwave oven from their campaign donors. In their defense, haggis at room temperature? I don't even think I need to finish that sentence. Today's show was produced by Colin and me because Betsy Kaplan reported for jury duty today in her Princess Leia costume. Katie Tolarski is our executive producer. Greg Hill appeared in the intro, and he's our tweet master. Follow us at WNPR Colin. The part of Bill Curry was played by Danny Kaye. For stories, links, web extras, and videos of the Faith Middleton Show staff and Buckskin performing Ugga Wugga Wigwam, visit WNPR.org. We'll be back with The Scramble on Monday. And now, back to Colin.
Yeah, The Scramble is our Monday show, which we assemble on deadline based on stuff that we thought was exciting over the weekend. All right, so it's time for endorsements. This is when we tell you about things that we know about or that our guests know about that you may not know about that may make you happy. So I'm going to start over here with Luis because I think I heard Teresa say she wasn't sure what she was going to endorse.
Well, I am adopting a new policy that there are endorsements and there are blogs, right?
Yeah, that's exactly.
So blogs are things that we haven't seen or participated in and we want to support. There is a new film opening up in New York City and Los Angeles tonight. It's called Gloria from Chile by a writer-director, Sebastián Lelio, that I saw the review in the New York Times this morning, and very intriguing, many things about the film that are great, but I endorse or plug the idea of people in their 50s, like the characters in the movie, going to a club that is actually targeted for people in their 50s who want to dance. In terms of actual endorsements, because this is a topic in the news constantly, as a former smoker, I want to endorse using e-cigarettes to actually help you quit.
I want to do a whole show about e-cigarettes.
Because
you have to come on.
Oh, sure. Yeah. I'll do that because I try all kinds of ways to do it. And the only one that worked was that one. And I know there is a great controversy about them. There was an article in the paper about, you know, in prisons, for example, they're using them because they are allowing some of the prisoners, the convicts, to use them. And so people are against them because they're supposed to stimulate people to smoke. But I would say in my case, it worked perfectly for quitting.
All right. Jacques, you're next.
I want to endorse the National Book Award winner of this year, James McBride's book, The Good Lord Bird, which I read when I was on vacation. And working at the Twain House, this is not a plug, I had heard that the book was very Twainy, and in a lot of ways it is. It's very funny, follows the adventures of a young man who is a slave. This is pre-Civil War, and he has to kind of dress up as a girl to escape detection as he kind of gets handed around to different folks. But it's very funny. And there are characters that get drawn into it like Harriet Tubman and Frederick Douglass. And it all leads up to this big conflagration. And it's really a fun, interesting read. So I highly recommend The Good Lord Bird.
Teresa Kramer, have you composed an endorsement?
I did. I came up with one when we were talking about rock star behavior. It reminded me of these videos on YouTube of David Lee Roth and his herding dogs. He's apparently really into herding sheep now, and he trains these border collies and travels with them around the globe, but also makes videos about it but says very David Lee Rothian things while doing it. And so he'll be like, the sheep are kind of like hockey fans. Two of them are drunk. You know, one of them screaming at you. The other one has no idea what's going on. And they're hilarious. And he loves these dogs very much.
All right. I want to mention that Wolfie is co-hosting a benefit at the Hartford Club this Sunday night. $35 to hear Beat City Beauties, Little Ugly, and Caravan of Thieves. Doesn't sound like a Hartford Club lineup somehow. But anyway, Benefit Studio N11 on Pratt Street. And Wolfie, or whoever's on the board, Wolfie, you can bring up the music right now. This is a local band. I'm going to endorse them. They're called Mob Jack. a lot of people send me their CDs, and some of the CDs are good, and some of them are just maybe good but not my taste, but some of them are, frankly, a lot of them, frankly, are just not that good. These guys are really good. I don't know anything about them. They recorded this in Windsor, you can find out more about them at Mob Jack Music. I think that's sort of mostly what their digital presence is, whether they're on Facebook or Twitter, or they have a website too. Anyway, the band is Mob Jack. I've actually already forgotten the actual name of the CD. This is the first cut. It's called Dandelions. We'll go out with it.
Turnpikes, twisting lines, the thunderclap of man could remove our kingly crowns. We are drinking dandelions. We are drinking dandelions. We are drinking dandelions.
I'm Kyon Wolf, and as a diehard Justin Bieber fan, I'm worried about him. With all this erratic behavior, he might end up being the mayor of Toronto someday.